Welcome to the Careless Talk Climbing Podcast with me, Sam Pryor, and my co-host, Aidan Roberts.
Hello.
This week, we've got Taylor McNeil joining us. Taylor is a super strong climber from the southeast of America.
No. He's tall, not strong.
He's tall, not strong. Sorry. Yeah, he's a very tall climber. He's a very tall person who does rock climbs from the southeast of America.
That wasn't harsh. It was referencing a comment he makes about himself in his Instagram bio.
Yeah, we're not totally lying up. He is a super strong climber. He's climbed like up to 8C plus, but he's also done loads of development, and he's done loads of like first ascents and stuff. But he's also like a really nice, like humble guy. When I was out in Joe's, I got to watch him a little bit climbing his 8C plus Moonlight Sonata, which is absolutely nails. And I just like would like look at the holds and like, I just couldn't really fathom how it was climbable. I thought, wow, this guy's ridiculously strong. And then like on another day, I was climbing like a little 8A, and he wandered up, and I was like, I asked him like, have you got any tips or like beta suggestions? And he was like, no, I haven't done it. I was like so shocked. Wow. I was like, oh, have you just not tried it? And he's like, no, I tried it a bunch, I just can't do it. I was like, he was like so like chill and like humble to just casually say that, like as a guy who's like climbing 8C plus and could do like ridiculously hard things. He's like, yeah, he's not worried to like pretend that he can do all styles. Like he doesn't love crimps.
It's quite nice. He's accepting. I feel like that was also a big theme of the podcast. Like it was quite a lot of that acceptance. And yeah, I find like, myself trying to justify my comment I just made a minute ago about him being tall, not strong, because I feel guilty for sounding harsh. But it also leads to another part of the conversation we had about maybe the general phenomenon of people detracting from others' achievements and efforts. And so I feel like that was also another theme we covered quite a lot in the podcast. So a lot about Taylor's climbing, but a lot of the psychology and community that surrounds it as well, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, exactly. It was a lovely chat, and it was nice to speak to him again.
Yeah. Well, I've never met him, only briefly, but you've actually had a nice climbing trip with him. Anyway, enough of that. If you are interested in supporting this podcast and keeping the show on the road, maybe you could consider becoming a patroon. We offer a Patreon with two different tiers. The first gives you access to some exclusive content. We throw up some odd clips every now and again. We do a giveaway. We did some signed versions of Spotter. Maybe there's some like climbing holds on the horizons at some point. I've been doing a few write-ups about my time here in Finland. And actually this week I've been rewarded with some dry weather. So we'll put up some clips of some attempts at Burden of Dreams. I feel like people are quite interested in that. So you can join our Patreon and have access to all this exclusive content. And another tier will also give you access to a Discord account where you can pitch us questions, and also gives you access to just a community of friendly, supportive climbers who won't detract from your achievements. And it's quite a nice little family feel on there. So if you'd like to support us further, maybe consider checking these out, and we're very grateful.
Thanks for listening. Have you done podcasts before?
I did one. I don't think they ever released it though. Oh. So I don't know what's happening with that.
Okay, because that's kind of good for us, because sometimes people who've done lots of other podcasts expect a higher level of professionalism than we provide.
I know. We offer informality and relaxed conversations.
Oh, right.
Whereabouts are you? You're like keeping an eye on weather and conditions at the moment. So I assume you're on a trip or climbing a lot at home.
I'm in North Carolina right now. I live in Utah and Salt Lake City. My parents have a house here in North Carolina, so I've been here for like almost 6 months now.
Oh wow!
Yeah. Oh wow. Okay. Oh cool.
I'm going home soon though. 3 weeks.
Wow. Okay. I've actually not heard of all that much climbing around North Carolina, but my geography of the U.S. is
But this is the thing, isn't it? Because this is one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, Jono, is because as Europeans, we don't know anything about Southeast US climbing, really, do we?
I've got a map up now and it's way further like east in my mind. In my head, it was like, oh, of Northern America, there's like the North and the South. And then I knew that it was obviously the West Coast and Colorado felt towards the West, but I never quite realized quite how like far it spans.
We've done our homework.
Y'all are going to get a kick out of this as I drove there too. It's like 26 or 30 hours or something.
Crikey. Yeah, that is one thing universally everyone I know from the US is far more willing to drive long distances than people in the UK. Like
for y'all, it's like 5 hours is like a huge deal.
Yeah, for sure. There's someone from the UK who like often will drive a couple of hours for a day out bouldering. And it's he's kind of like renowned in the climbing scene for being one of the most keen outdoor climbers. But people I speak to in the US, it'll be like, oh yeah, we'll drive from like Colorado to Nevada for the weekend.
I do it from Utah to Vegas. I do like all the time in the winter and it's like 6.5 hours.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a full length of our country.
How long would you be staying out there if you drove out there? Is that just for like a weekend or?
Sometimes for a weekend, sometimes I'll do like 4 days. I kind of get haggard after sleeping in the car for a bit. I like to go home and like recover properly.
And where you are now, this is home for you originally, right?
Originally, yeah.
Yeah. So where is that? What's the climbing area that's closest to there?
It's in Boone, North Carolina.
Right.
It's kind of like, I would compare it more to like, it's not like an area, but it's more like a region, kind of like how Fontainebleau is set up. It's not like one area. It's like a whole bunch of places kind of scattered around, but they're all like in a pretty small radius. So like within an hour, I could be at like a ton of different little zones.
Ah, okay. And the, so I might completely mess this up because in my mind, when I like look at like videos of like Southern Sandstone, there's a lot of it in the US, which looks like, but I realize Southern is like a very large brushstroke term. Lots of it does look almost Fontesque. That looks like some incredible rock.
Some of it is, yeah. Boone is, I think it's nice.
Oh, it has nice.
Like some sandstone, like sometimes it feels like sandstone. Sometimes it feels like closer to granite. It has like a very weird mix kind of like scattered throughout.
Yeah. Okay.
I've never been to Switzerland and climbed, but I've heard a lot of people compare it to like the rock and magic wood, that the rock is similar.
Right.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Because there is a lot of gneiss around the Ticino area. And like,
yeah.
Often in Europe, I feel like Brioni is referenced for like some of the best rock. I feel like a lot of that is not nice, but I'm not a geologist.
It's cool. I like it here. There's not very many people, so you kind of get a lot of areas to yourself. And then I just like go out and have a field day because there's also not a lot of stuff that's been done that's hard here. So there's a lot of like room for development, even in like not like the top tier levels. Like there's a lot of like V12 and harder boulders that like just haven't been done or haven't been found or haven't been tried. So I just get to like go clean boulders and like run around and like have a lot of fun figuring out new things.
Oh, nice.
I mean, it must be pretty good if you've been doing it for the last 6 months.
Yeah. it's like really mild in the summer here. It's definitely not good, but it doesn't get that hot. So you can still climb in the summer. Like a lot more moderate grades, but you can climb outside in the summer. And I just kind of hate going to the gym. So I came here in the summer and it's nice to just like be outside and run around.
Yeah, I quite like that. I was actually chatting to a friend about like climbing in the UK and when you train and like when you climb outside. And I was reflecting on recent years. I've also always just climbed loads in the summer around the UK. And it's not particularly good conditions, but you can find manageable conditions. It's quite nice just to like make the most of it when you can, and save the really good weather for the pick and choose.
I like to kind of like try things when it's warm, and then like get a feel for it, and then you're like, I can come back to that one when it's actually nice out.
It can be hard psychologically to like hold yourself to it as well, though, and not get like, you can be like, oh, this is obviously really hard for me, or like you can get proper humblings on these problems and just be like, oh, wow, thought I was good at this stuff. Thought I was all right at climbing. And then you come back to it when it's cold and you're like, oh, actually,
actually it makes a difference. So bad,
But can I ask, so you grew up around North Carolina.
I did.
And did you grow up doing a lot of climbing?
I started climbing when I was 18.
Oh, relatively late. Nice. Similar age to Sam, I feel.
Same age.
Oh, really?
One of us.
Nice. Yeah. Late bloomer.
How come you started so late? Was that because I'm guessing from a bit of what you said, climbing's not absolutely massive around South Carolina.
North Carolina. But
North Carolina. Sorry.
There was like, I think I went and climbed like at like a birthday party when I was like 10, maybe. And like, I remember doing it being like, oh, this is fun, this is cool. But like, I didn't realize at that time that it was a thing that you could do. I just thought it was like, like a thing that people just like, oh, you have your birthday party there. It didn't occur to me that it was a sport.
It's like, going bowling or something. I see. That gets competitive, but in my head, it's like, you don't think about, oh, my sport, bowling.
I know. Every now and then you see people down there with like the gloves and the team shirts and you think, wow, that's crazy.
You're like,
how often do you go bowling?
I go bowling the normal amount, like once a year.
That's a lot.
Try and get a double figure score.
Okay. So you went and tried it, but didn't realize that it was a proper thing. But then, well, you're now here and you're a full-time climber?
Two-thirds, maybe, mostly.
Yeah, most of your time. You sleep a little bit.
I sleep a little, yeah.
Okay, so what happened there?
Yeah, what happened when you were 18 that got you going?
So I was a troubled youth. My parents sent me to a boarding school. I was getting in a lot of trouble. I was difficult. I can acknowledge that. So they sent me to this boarding school, and I remember that like halfway through my stay there, I was there for a year, this other kid like came to the school, and he was a climber, and he was so psyched about climbing, and he would not shut up about climbing. And I remember when he first got there, he would like really annoy me because I was like, God's kid just won't shut up about climbing. Like, and like the last month that we were there, he had finally like got it worked out to where we could go to this climbing gym like once a week. And we had to pick a physical activity to do. So I was like, well, I'll just go like do the climbing. And I think I went to this gym like 3 or 4 times maybe before I left. Like before I graduated high school, and I was like, wow, that's really fun. Like, this is like, I didn't realize like how much I enjoyed it. And when I got home, my mom told me that she was like, well, there's this climbing gym that just opened like right down the road from my parents' house. And I just went there like one time, and then the next day I went and bought some shoes, got membership. That was it.
The rest is history.
I was stuck.
So then you became that guy that was annoying you so much.
Yes.
Do you don't happen to still be in touch with that guy, do you?
Not really. I don't think he climbs much anymore.
So now you can annoy him.
He passed on the bug.
I don't really want to hang out with you, man, because you don't shut up about climbing.
The world's reverse.
Yeah.
So I happen to already know one bit from some you said when we were out in Joe's, but at what point did you move into a school bus?
Oh God. Okay. That was like 2014, maybe.
Wow. So quite a bit later, is that?
It was quite a bit later, yeah. So my parents, I grew up like 3 hours away from Boone, where all the climbing is outside. And I came up here and I lived for a short amount of time. I moved back to the city where my parents are from, in Raleigh. And I route set there for like 4 years, maybe. And then I moved back up here to Boone. And that was when I moved into the school bus, like shortly after that.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. What inspired that?
I had a girlfriend at the time, and she had got accepted to do this teaching program in Japan for like a year, like the JET program. And we were before that planning on moving in together, and she had got accepted like super last minute. She was on a waiting list. And I was like, well, shit, like, I don't know what to do now. Like we were going to move in together. And at the same time, I had this friend, Joey, who was like developed a lot of the Boone climbing in like the 90s and early 2000s. And he was like, dude, I just bought this bus and it's like parts of my land. Like, you come live in this bus. So I was like,
I love it. And your response to that was, yes.
I was like, sweet, okay.
Wow, yeah. I feel like that is quite nice. Like, I feel like
the timing was like perfect. It could not have timed any better.
But also, I feel like not everyone is up for, you know, when there's an idea which like in your head is, wow, that's really fun. Like, it would be a really good experience. But I feel like it's rare that people can be so open-minded or like impulsive to be like, oh, actually, that sounds a fun idea and I'm actually going to do it. Like, I feel like it's such a common case that people are like reluctant to make such big changes in their life. And I don't know, I feel it myself as well.
How much conversion did you do?
Not a lot. Like, we cut all the seats out and just like put some furniture in it, and that was pretty much it.
Nice. Did it move the van? Like,
oh, it didn't. No, it was very stationary.
No wheels.
It did not run. We did actually, one of the things we did was we built like this little shack, this like shed that was like enclosed onto the side of the school bus. So it kind of like doubled it in size.
Oh, wow.
And then in that room, we put in like a wood stove and like a little like kitchenette, like a sink. So I had like running water. I had power. Like, I just had this giant extension cord that was running down from Joey's barn to the bus.
It sounds a pretty nice setup.
I lived there for almost 2 years, a year and a half, I think.
Wow.
And then I tried to convince my girlfriend at the time to move in with me, and she was like, not about it.
Oh, wow.
So.
Don't know why.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
With two people.
Was it cold there? Was it, like, what kind of temperature was it?
It got pretty cold. The first year I stayed through an entire winter with like no heat. And it gets into the teens Fahrenheit. I'm not sure what that is.
What's that in euros? That's probably
it's
low.
It's pretty cold.
It?
It's like below zero.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Wait, let's have a look. Wait, a quick little Google search. 15 degrees Fahrenheit is -9. Degrees Celsius.
Whoa, that is cold.
Okay. That's quite bleak.
But like, so I would sleep in there, but I would go hang out. Like, trying to explain Joey's house is very difficult. Joey has like, it's almost like a commune. There's like the bus is one of many of these like shacks on his property, and people just like will move into one of these shacks and like stay for a year or like stay for like 7 or 8 years. And like, Joey has this huge barn that he like tore it down in like the 90s and rebuilt it. And it's like this big open barn with like a living space in it with like multiple stories. It has like a climbing wall in the barn. And there's like a handful of boulders in his backyard.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Sounds like a little oasis.
It was incredible to live there. And it was like at the time where I was like really trying to be a professional climber. And I was like, well, like if I can't make money climbing, I was like, I can at least live here for almost nothing and I can go climbing all the time. So it was like, this is the closest I'm going to get at this point.
If you enjoy the climbing there as well and enjoy the people, like whether you're there or traveling all over the place, the day to day is relatively similar. Yeah, I've actually been really interested. I've read a lot of examples around the UK of this kind of like community or collaborative living. Is it almost like everyone has their independent space, but there's a certain element of you collaborate to like kind of
take
the weight off everyone else's back. So everyone like makes some contribution in time or energy, creates like quite a community, and you have shared space and things. I've been really fascinated by that kind of living.
It's very much like that, where it's like, oh, someone has a project up at their shack, they need help like putting a roof on or like cutting some wood or something like that. Like we'd all just help each other out. And then Joey's actual living space is kind of like the common area where like everyone would go hang out at the barn, like at Joey's. And people still come, and like people from all over like will just come and stay at the barn. The way that Joey is he's like, oh dude, like if you guys came to North Carolina, I could just like tell Joey, I'd be like, hey man, I'm sending these two dudes over to the barn. He'd be like, sweet. Like never met you, doesn't care. Like you guys could just show up. He'll like walk you through the backyard, show you the boulders. Like,
wow. That sounds like a special place.
How many of the people really who are cool. there are climbers?
Kind of like on and off, like, I don't know, half of them maybe.
Okay, so it's not like a prerequisite type thing.
No.
Yeah.
No, some people just like, they just really like hanging out there.
Yeah. It's funny actually, like I've had quite a few discussions with my older brother and some friends I have about like this kind of living, but I've never really thought of integrating that so much with the climbing world. But I feel like climbers as a subset of just society, they're quite well aligned with that kind of lifestyle.
It was sick. I had so much fun, but I would never do it again.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay. I wasn't expecting that bit.
I'm too old now and I want my own space.
Yeah.
I want to like be able to like really relax and like do like whatever I want to do. But I had like the time of my life living there. I would do it again at that time period, but where I'm at now, I'm like, no way.
Oh, yeah, that's actually quite a nice place to, kind of like grateful that you did it, but
yeah,
it was right for you there and then.
It was right at that time period, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow, that's pretty amazing. So I guess in that time, over those 2 years, you were quite near where you're based now, right?
Yeah, I saw Joey like a couple days ago.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
So I guess it's quite a familiar area. And,
yeah.
Is that like when you kind of transitioned to mostly just climbing outside in that period?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Before that, I was route setting like 5 days a week at a commercial gym.
Wow. That's a lot to route set.
It was heinous. I was injured most of the time.
And was that in the era where route setters didn't get paid much?
Oh yeah, I got paid horribly.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Damn. If you were route setting 5 days a week, I feel these days you'd be doing quite well.
There was like
definitely
four or five of us who all route set full time 5 days a week, like 8 hour days. And every single one of us lived at our parents' house because we couldn't afford to pay rent on our own.
Wow.
That is a state, isn't it? That is a state.
Yeah.
What is it? Is it? I presume it's moved on now. Like in the US setting, it's not.
I think it's better. It's definitely better. I have no interest in doing it anymore, though.
Oh no! When did you stop?
I think I stopped like right around the time I met you, actually, like a few years ago.
All right. Was there a particular reason, or is it just like you just didn't want to do it anymore?
I just feel like I couldn't climb what I wanted to climb because I was always tired from route setting.
Mm. Yeah. For a brief spell, I had that idea that I feel like most people who get really into climbing, but they're not yet good enough to be like sponsored or professional climbers.
Yeah.
I feel like I definitely had the attitude of, well, route setting is the obvious option. I get to climb loads. And then you do it a few times and you're like, wow, my skin is awful from testing a load of like V2s. I'm so tired from like lugging boxes around.
Yeah, it's just a lot of it is just hauling as well. It's just manual, like heavy work.
Yeah.
Constant tendonitis.
Yeah.
It's hard, man. The people who do it like for a really long time, I don't know how they do it. It's so demanding.
Mm. No, big time. And I think most people are like slowly wising up to the fact that it's not actually the best thing to go alongside climbing. That actually you're much better off in a chill an office job, because then when you're working, you're just recovering and then you can go climb. Whereas like if your job is climbing, then at the bit where you're supposed to climb, you're tired from all the job.
I remember there was like time periods where I would be like 15, 16, 20 days like on in a row climbing. Because you'd set and four run 5 days in a row. And then you're like, well, I want to go climb on the weekend because I'm going to go climb on the weekend.
Yeah.
And you go like drive 3 hours, you climb outside both days, and you go back to work and you climb five more days. And then you're like, well, it's good again this weekend. I want to go again. So you go again and you're like,
wow.
You're just like thrashed. Like,
does your skin ever adapt?
You should climb with a lot of tape.
Sure.
Like I think you're just operating at like 60% probably.
You're trying 100%.
Because I remember like the first like year and a half or 2 years that I climbed, I had like really rapid progression, and then I started route setting and I did not get any better at climbing for like the next like 3 or 4 years.
Right.
Wow.
Nice.
Like I think I learned how to climb better, but I didn't climb any harder.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
And at some point you said earlier that you don't like to climb inside at all now.
If I have to, I will, but not really.
Is that kind of go along with just the fact that you'd rather wait for the conditions, or is the conditions there reasonable enough that you can mostly climb?
I think I would rather climb below my limit in bad conditions on real rock than I would like go in the gym and like train.
Right. So do you do any like supplementary training?
Very rarely. If I get really, really psyched on something specific, then I'll like kick it into gear and do something, but that's pretty rare.
Wow. So right. Most of it is just, rock climbing.
I do it in a way that like, if I have a big project that I want to do, then I still like prepare myself like by climbing outside. Where if like, I really wanted to climb Multiverse like a couple, I think it was like a year ago. And I would like picked all of these like easier power endurance boulders, because I was like, well, I need to have a lot of power endurance. So I was picking like really long, like power endurance boulders, and was just like kind of working my way through like slightly harder, slightly harder, slightly harder. And then I was like, okay, I feel like now at this point, I'm ready to go try what I want to try.
Yeah. Okay. And like almost like pick and choose to like match styles, I guess, like compression style or like, things which feel like the limiting factor on the main project.
And you climbed that, didn't you? So it must have worked.
I think it worked.
It's quite a nice way of getting a lot of climbing done as well.
Yeah. And then you also get to like send cool things in the process.
Yeah, it is an interesting idea when I think about the amount of time that I've put into doing board projects. I'll just take the holds off at some point or like move them around and like they'll never see the light of day, that where I could have probably been climbing outside and getting a similar kind of training thing. I think, well, it depends where you are.
Obviously. Yeah, it's in the UK, we just can't really do that. I mean, Jack kind of suggests that you kind of can, but like for the most part, we just don't have the conditions to do that, really.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I always wonder is like, if you look at people who like train religiously to like go and try and do a boulder, and then you look at people who just go and try the boulder, the person who trains like will show up in much better shape and they'll probably do the boulder in a lot less sessions. But when you add in the amount of time they spent preparing versus the person who showed up like and learned and prepared on the boulder, like who actually does it faster?
Yeah. So it's like if you have 20 sessions training in the gym, but then do it in 3 sessions, it's still taking longer than someone who took 15 sessions to do it.
Yeah.
There's like a time and a place for both, right? Mm-hmm. The skill of showing up and executing, or like the skill of like showing up so many times, maybe reading the nuances and the finer details of a climb, understanding all of that. It's like a really important skill for climbing like boulders, which are hard for you, which you can't really replicate that easily in a climbing wall, or like it's much harder to. You might both climb the boulder. It might take you similar or different amount of times. The outcome of it is you've practiced very different skills.
Yeah. Like you can become really, really good at training, or you can become like really efficient at climbing a rock and understanding.
Yeah. And how do you find you function as a climber? It sounds like you do a lot of rock climbing, so I assume you probably fit further towards that like kind of climb well on rock kind of thing. Do you have like a style?
I really like compression slopers, heel hooks. I am absolutely horrible on crimps.
So because this is kind of like what you're known for, isn't it? Because you're really tall, right?
Yeah.
How tall are you?
I think it's in centimeters is like 190.
Oh, that is quite tall.
Yeah. And have you got a positive ape as well? Or
I have plus like 2.5 inches. What is that, like 5 or 6 centimeters?
Okay. Yeah. Oh yeah, more even, yeah.
Because it's funny, like in like the general population, that's not like crazy tall, really. But in climbing, that's crazy tall.
Yeah, I feel tall in the climbing world, but not in the other world.
Yeah. It's like if you were playing basketball, you'd be like the shortest guy on the court.
Yeah.
Even in your Instagram bio, it says tall, not strong. Is that because of like stuff? Have you had that kind of when you've been climbing, like people have said like, oh, you just lanked it or whatever? Or is that just kind of like a bit of a joke or?
Oh, when I remember when I first started excelling and climbing in the beginning, I just had people like all the time. They were like, well, you just reached that. Like, that's easy for you. Like, and that was kind of like my way. Like when I figured that out, I was like, okay, well, this is me just kind of being like, all right, well, fuck you guys then.
Yeah. You just take ownership of it. And then,
I was like, I can't change what I got. Like, I'd be like silly to not use it to my advantage.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like it's really easy to see how when people are smaller, how they get like shut down. But it's not as obvious to see it when someone's taller because they're like, well, you can physically reach it all. But dude, when you try to put like these limbs into a small box, it feels like it just doesn't work.
Yeah. And the taller you are, like the heavier you are, the bigger your hands.
I don't know if that has anything to do with being bad at crimps or not, but because I'm not that heavy for my size. I'm like 165 or 170 pounds.
Got all these American
metrics.
I'm not
sure what that is.
Let's see. If this makes any sense.
Wait. But the classic thing when people are getting into climbing, you always hear like, oh, it's easy if you can just reach it. But then if you look at the top climbers, or like you look at like a World Cup final in bouldering, the average height is like, I don't know.
It's like 5'9".
Yeah. Like I'm like, when I climb up, I have kind of long arms, but I'm like 5'8", 5'8½". I think I'm like 172, 173 centimeters anyway. And I quite often, with long arms, I quite often get told I use lanky beer. And I'm like, wow, I'm definitely not lanky. Like, I'm pretty sure I'm like bang average height or maybe even below it.
I know. It's the great thing about like growing up, like in school, I was the short one. And then sometimes you go out with a bunch of climbers and I can be the tallest one there at 5'9". As you're saying that, Aiden, because like climbers in general are short, there must be an advantage to be short overall.
And it's not like there's taller climbers, like tall people aren't climbing. Like I know so many climbers that are tall, but they like generally struggle a little bit on things with like certain things like small boxes and like just kind of just like foothold in normal regions. Like obviously there were like counter examples to anything you throw out there, but like generally it can be quite hard
on harder like graded boulders. I feel like the grades make no sense to me.
Yeah.
Like because sometimes it's like I'm like, well, that's just really, really easy for me. And no one else or most other people can't do it the way that I did it. Or I have the complete opposite experience where I'm like, everyone says this boulder is like really low end and I just can't do it at all, like to save my life.
Yeah.
And like very occasionally things are like, I'm like, oh, that one makes sense. I did what everyone else did.
Yeah. Like,
yeah,
but which is quite time, I just feel like I'm climbing completely different things.
Yeah,
which is quite a nice, like it's quite a nice thing about the sport, right? Especially like I feel like it's very easy to take climbing too seriously, or like the grading of climbing and like kind of the significance of what you're doing too seriously. A little reminder of, oh, these are bits of rock and they're like different for everyone is sometimes quite nice.
Yeah.
And like also it happens the other way. So like you get it a lot being tall, but unfortunately with the climbing world being as it is, the people who are really small get it as well.
Yeah.
You know, oh, Lynn Hill only climbed the nose because she's got small fingers. You know, like Ashima was sending like V12 when she was 9 because she's got small fingers.
Yeah.
So people are just desperate to take away from other people. Both sides of the coin. But I just think it must be really interesting, particularly being tall, when people say like, oh, you're not strong, you're just tall or whatever. How does that feel when you're also climbing like 28 days in a row and like working super hard?
Oh man, I think it used to bother me a lot more in the beginning because I felt like when I was young, like I felt like I really had something to prove. And yeah, it bothered me a lot more, and I was like, well, I'll show you, like I'll go do like this, like I'll go do something that's not like that. But yeah, I feel like now I just want to climb what I enjoy climbing on.
Do you like lean into it more now? Like do you look more for the kind of compression stuff?
I look for both. I feel like I really actually enjoy climbing on like really like small box and kind of crimpy boulders, as long as they're not painful, because they feel so foreign and like I don't understand how to climb on them. And in the last like few years, I've really started to kind of enjoy that more because I just like, it makes me feel like I'm getting better. Like I'm starting to learn how to climb. And I think that I understand really well how to climb on compression boulders. And I usually don't have as much like subtleties where I feel like I have to figure out. But on crimp boulders, I just feel like I don't know what I'm doing.
it's like a whole new sport.
Yeah. It's like when you go crack climbing for the first time.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
I don't want to relive that experience. but well, firstly, it sounds like we couldn't be far different in our climbing styles. But I saw quite recently, I think only a couple of days ago, you put up a clip of a first ascent you did on like a really cool, really steep face, but like a massive the beekeeper, I think it was. And that looked like kind of crimps, edges in a roof. But
it's pretty fingery, yeah.
That thing looks amazing as well.
It also looked massive.
It's, dude, so that guy Joey I was telling you about actually found that boulder.
Wow.
Like 30 years ago.
Oh yeah, and didn't you say in your like description that it was then lost to time, like they couldn't re-find it?
I went with Joey one time and to try to find it, and we hiked for like 3 hours and did the worst bushwhack I have ever done in my life, and we didn't find it.
So you were just like taking his word that it exists.
Yeah, and like, I mean, he found it in like the 90s, so like he didn't have pictures of it or anything, and he's like telling me, he's like, it's really sick, like.
And you're like, where is it?
Yeah. And like, we didn't even see, I didn't even see like rock. Like we were just in a forest, like no rock, like nothing the whole way.
Wow. Okay. So how did that reemerge?
So there's this other guy who lives here. His name's Aaron Parlier, and he's really psyched on like developing and like finding stuff. And I told Aaron where I thought it was, based on where Joey told me he thought it was. And Aaron like went and found it.
Like straight away, like in 5 minutes. It's right there, guys.
It's roadside, actually.
It was a real journey. It sounds like he had a hell of a time finding it. And then he also had like a real hell of a time like making a trail to it so you could actually get pads back there.
Oh, wow.
So Aaron did like an insane amount of work. Like it took him like, I bet you he put in like at least like a 40-hour work week just to like prepare the boulder. And I went and helped him like 2 or 3 days. But I feel like what I did is like less than 10% of what he did.
Wow. All
right. But then,
oh, that's quite nice. That's nice. It's, yeah.
But then, did you swoop the first ascent?
He was not that psyched on that one.
Oh right. There's a few things on the boulder.
The boulder has like it's probably like 30 problems on it.
Oh, yeah, right. I was going to say it looks like there's like it looks like so a like massive that, face.
That big overhang probably has like 4 or 5, maybe 6 when you start like linking things together, and then the whole left side of the boulder is like out of frame. There's like all these like bubbly pocketed holds, and there's like a ton of moderates. And so even so, I think the hardest thing on that side was like 7C maybe.
Mm.
But Aaron climbed like all of those. And he was most psyched to like do that whole other side of the boulder.
Yeah. If that was in the UK, it'd be like a premier crag and it would have 3,000 link ups.
Yeah.
It'd be like the full traverse round the boulder done 6 times and then backwards.
I don't know what you're referencing there. So. It's nearly always like a really keen local that just goes absolutely above and beyond that make these places kind of accessible.
Dude, and they're always the people you never hear about too.
Yeah. Totally under the radar.
Like, you hear about like person who does the boulder and does the first ascent and they get all the attention, but it's like there's always someone else.
Yeah. We've been saying it
a bunch, haven't we?
we chatted to Isabel Faust because I got to know Isabel and Chad a lot when I was out in Colorado. And I always think that's quite a good example of it because he has put in like so much work cleaning boulders, and then he'll just show them to people and just be like, yeah, I'm not trying it. Go for it. And I'm like, what? you spent so long finding and cleaning this, and he just, I'm so nice.
Do you ever have trouble, like, because of the same thing as what you said before, like, do you have trouble grading stuff that you first ascent? Because obviously if you've used a lot of your height.
Dude, I have so much trouble. The biggest problem that I have is that a lot of times I'll do it without having like sessioned on it with someone else who is capable.
Right.
And it will leave me like even more confused. And like all I can kind of do is like guess, like where I'm like, well, it took me 5 days and it felt really hard. And
yeah, I guess it's like trying to figure out why it felt hard, isn't it? Because if it felt hard to you because it was like a small box, then you might be about to get a downgrade. Whereas if it's the other way around, you might be about to undercook the grade.
Yeah. And I feel like I never have, like, I just never know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I can do my best. And what always bothers me is that if you like really sandbag it, like people just don't go try it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you like put something up that's really soft, then all of a sudden like people are like they go out there and they like run train on it because they're all like, oh, get big numbers, big points, and like, and then they're like, someone will eventually downgrade it, and then they're so, like, wow.
There's always so much weird pride associated with grades and downgrading. Like, I feel like downgrading is often a point of pride for a lot of people as well, which I don't know,
it's very interesting to me because it doesn't make the boulder any easier or any harder depending on what grade you put on it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, a really good point.
You still do the boulder, and that's like, that seems like the most important thing.
There is a subset of people that seem to take like a huge amount of joy in just downgrading. Like they're looking to downgrade any opportunity.
I actually, when you were saying that, it really made me think, and I won't explain all his rationale because he has many different reasons for doing it. But I don't know if you know an Italian climber, Nicky Cheria. And he's an amazing climber. I've always been really inspired by his ethos with his climbing, and he's very like principled. And I chatted to him a lot. I got to know him this spring, and he kind of he doesn't really grade any of the climbs he does. I was talking to him about visiting. He like kind of has done loads of development around northern Italy, and I'd really like to visit at some point. It is nice when you visit a place or you see pictures of places to like kind of understand, get a reference of how the level of like commitment it's going to take to climb it. So like, because he'll like obviously like take artistic photos of like these amazing climbs, and some of them are really hard, and he's put loads of effort into like the individual moves and the high balls, and they're logistically really challenging. And then there's some which like obviously look amazing, but maybe are like super moderate. Mm-hmm. And it's like nice to know before you travel, like if you like take a ferry and drive to like northern Italy, it's nice to know, almost know what you're going for. And the way he said he'd describe it to me, like he's given me loads of information on boulders. I'm out in Finland at the moment. He's given me like loads of information on the stuff here. And what he'll usually reference is, oh, so I climbed it this way and it took me this many days, or it took me this much effort. And like, or like it might be like, it took me this many days, but on this day I found a new method that unlocked it for me and it felt okay, kind of thing. That's quite nice because I've climbed with him. I know what he's good at, and you can kind of see it, and you kind of know the energy that would probably take to, and you obviously like can't guarantee, oh, well, I'll probably do it this quickly or something. But like, you know roughly what ballpark you're operating in, quite a relaxed way of doing it. Obviously it's not particularly like relatable for people because it's quite impractical for anyone who wants to go try someone else's boulders to like know them personally, but it's quite a nice way of doing it and feels a bit void of pride. It made me think of it when you were saying sometimes it's really hard to know how hard something is in terms of the grading scale, and so you just reference your own input to it, if that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. Nicky, I have climbed with him a few times. He's very interesting, and he has like I really respect his like the way that he approaches climbing as well. I remember I climbed on that Mind to Motion boulder in Colorado with him, and there was like some significantly easier beta but it was not the way that Daniel put the boulder up. And Nikki was like, yeah, I just don't want to try it that way. I want to do the boulder that Daniel did that inspired me. And wow. it was way harder. Like the way that Daniel put the boulder up, there's like this, I can't remember it super well, but there was like a heel toe cam and like a recycle or something that just made it a lot easier. And Nikki was like, yeah, I'm just not interested in doing it that way.
Yeah. I love that, really. I love that because like it's all totally arbitrary, isn't it? Like the whole sport is arbitrary. So like if there's something that feels special to you, then do it that way. Absolutely.
Yeah. I had this same conversation today in the car with, I'm climbing with a German guy, Yannick Flo. We're out in Finland and we'd have some sessions trying Burden of Dreams. And basically everyone climbs it a different way, like holds a hold in different ways. And he was saying like, oh, I kind of feel on this boulder. The thing that I find inspiring about it is its history and like the way it was done and like kind of what it represents in climbing. And he was kind of like, I almost don't really want to like try the other methods. I want to do it the way it was done because like I feel like invested in that, the process when not like originally climbed it. And I was like, oh wow, that's really interesting. Because my like default, and I spec obviously if you like are developing a climb and you're trying projects, which I usually spend lots of my time doing, or like when I'm like trying my hardest climbs, generally I'm focusing on that. Or like they're usually the things that I put my energy into. And so usually I'm just like trying to find any improvement in method. I never really think about it.
Yes.
You just like look for
the best
anything.
Way possible.
Like to summarize the arbitrary nature of climbing, you literally look for the easiest way, the hardest piece of rock to scale. But it was an interesting idea. I hadn't really thought of it. I was kind of like, oh wow, I've never like approached a boulder in that way. But yeah, it's quite interesting. If you can be principled in that way and be like, no, this is what inspired me about this climb, this is how I want to do it, then like, yeah, like fair play.
Yeah, I guess if you're also like a foot taller than that person, it'd be very difficult to do it their way.
I run into that all the time.
Yeah.
I definitely respect that approach, but it's not my approach.
Yeah, I think it would make it harder for you, especially. Like you'd really be putting up extra difficulty.
Usually, I feel like what inspires me is the line, usually. Like that's like, if you take like all the factors that make a boulder really good or really bad, I feel like the number one thing is like the line.
Yeah. And something that Aiden said a few times on the podcast is like, when you're looking for like a first ascent, it's amazing if you find something that is a good line, but also suits your climbing style. And Aiden has found one in Switzerland, which he's working on, which suits him and is also really hard. But you have done that as well, because with Moonlight Sonata in Joe's, right? You were trying that when we were out there. For that, it's a really cool line. It must suit you really well. It's all compression. And you have to be, I would imagine, pretty tall to even be able to reach the boards. Like, not super tall, but like tallish.
Yeah.
Like, that must have been pretty cool to find.
Oh, it was incredible. It's like, and then to also find it like right on that like cusp of difficulty.
Yeah.
Where you're like, I think I can do it, but it's going to be really, really challenging.
Yeah.
That's like, it's impossible to find that. I have not found anything like that since.
It could be a one. It could be a once.
Yeah. Or before.
Yeah. So perfect, that thing. How long did it take you to do it?
I think it was like almost 50 sessions. I think it was just shy of 50. It was like 3.5 years. I remember I tried it when I first moved to Utah. I tried it like a couple months or maybe even like a month after I first got there.
And for people listening, could you describe it a bit?
It's like this big dome shaped cave. and it's just like really wide compression moves on kind of slick holds, actually. And it has really bad feet.
Yeah, the feet look really awkward. It looks like you can't really see the heel hooks as well.
Yeah, it's like the heel hooks are blind. Like, you're stepping on this smear that is like, it's just like a piece of like a 45 degree wall, and you're just like putting all of your weight on it on like an undercling.
Oh, pretty man. Special.
It was very special to find, and it was a very exhausting process.
When I often feel like when you try something like that, especially in that style, there's a lot of question marks, right? Usually if I find something that's really crimpy and you see a crimp, usually if I put a ladder up, if I like can feel the hold, if I can like feel the hold and kind of see where things are, I can usually pretty quickly get a good idea of whether it's at least possible for me. With terrible feet and like slopers, it's so hard to know if the puzzle adds up. I feel like you need a lot of time before you actually even have any clues as to whether, oh yeah, this works kind of thing. How was that process?
Dude, so what actually sucked me in so much on that one is that I was able to at least like understand all of the hand moves really quickly. And like with doing that like fairly quick, I was like, okay, well, I haven't done all the moves. I was like, but I'm close on all, I've done most of them and I'm close on the other couple. That I was like, if I can nail it down, then like I think I can do it. And what I didn't realize is that it was all of the transitions between the moves. And it was like how difficult each individual move was, that it like it built on itself way more than like any other boulder I'd ever tried. I think on day six I did all the moves, and then I think it was 2 days later I climbed it from two moves in to the top. And I had already, like, I did it in two pieces on my eighth session, and I was like, oh, I'm close. Probably do it soon.
Wow, okay. Wow, but that's like, amazing.
It was, to actually link it was so much more challenging than I realized. And I think if I had known what I was, like, signing up for at that time, then I may have like been more hesitant.
yeah, okay.
But I genuinely thought that I was like, I think that's, I had this like really, really crazy season. I think it was the season where I did it in two pieces, where I was like, oh, I could do it any day. Like I literally thought any day I could do the boulder. And as the season started ending, it was getting warmer. I was like waking up at like 5 a.m. and like warming up in the dark to like try it before the sun got on it when it was still cold. And I was doing that like over and over and over because I was like, I'm so close. I could do it any day now. And then every year that went past, it was like every season I had that same feeling where I was like, I could do the boulder any session.
Wow. Okay.
Wow. So you reckon about like 40 something of those sessions was like this could be the session.
Yeah, it wasn't until I think it was actually when you and Dave watched me that go, I stuck the move that had never stuck from the ground.
Yes.
And I had always thought in my head that I was like, oh, if I stick that hole, I'll do the boulder. And I stuck it and was like, oh my God, I had nothing.
So I couldn't move.
I was like, I like could barely get my feet back on, and dude, it was like mentally exhausting because of how close I felt for so long. And I think I had to like acknowledge that I actually wasn't close. And then I went and trained.
Okay. Yeah, I was gonna ask that, like the kind of like from session eight onwards, when you were like, oh, I could do this boulder any day. Retrospectively, now that you've done it and you look back at those times, was that, did
not
that
close.
Feel like, oh, really? Yeah. It felt like a bit of a delusion.
Close.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So if you could go back in time, you'd absolutely break your heart with that.
Oh, yeah.
You are nowhere near close.
No. you know how it is. You two piece a boulder, like you do a boulder, you climb it in two pieces, you climb it in two overlapping pieces, and you're like, oh, I'm really close. I'll probably do it soon.
Yeah.
And with every other boulder I'd ever tried, that had always been the case. And it just was not.
Yeah. I actually love those types of climbs, which are like that, where like, and I feel like it generally is the climbs where the transitions are like so hard, when it's like not necessarily doing the individual move that is hard, but all the like kind of nuances in body tension and really small details, which kind of, you'd never call them moves, maybe just like a slight rotation of a foot, a little readjustment that you have to do when you do a few moves off a hold. I feel like those boulders are always really interesting because it's really hard to predict necessarily how easy it will be in the entirety of the process. Some boulders, I feel like you can do the moves and you'd be like, oh, nice. They're of a reliable enough style that physically I can do it. I've just got to like execute and do it. Whereas like some kind of moves where like it is really technical, but also like it's not necessarily that it is just that it's technical and it's random errors that are coming off. It's really physical, but in a very nuanced way. You can't really see with your eye. It's not like fail on a move. It's you lose tension and that's why your foot slips kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to predict those.
I think that what it was on that one is the hardest move is you're on a left-hand undercling and you like campus and leave that undercling, the hardest move from the ground, sorry. And you do the first move like up into the undercling. And then you do all these right-hand slaps. And I think what it came down to is that you just never have the undercling good from the bottom because you're like going into it and you're doing all of these moves off of it that you end up having to do like the red point crux without having the hold good.
Yeah.
And that's really difficult to like practice, isn't it? It's quite difficult to practice the move with the hold bad. Like,
yeah.
Because if you're stood up, you take it right. It's quite difficult to like practice it. With it like all gammy and wrong. Like it's, you kind of have to do the move into it.
Let me pull on with this in a terrible position. It's all tweaky and kind of hurts my hand.
Exactly.
But, and so you went away and this is a climb that you like did some specific physical training for.
Yeah, I actually did Matt Boltz's like training program like twice. I did it once. And I got really, really, really close. I actually think I may have been stronger at that time, but I got really close doing it. And I like tweaked something in my back. And then like, I couldn't climb on it for the rest of that season. I think I may have like pinched a nerve or something. And then I like a year went by. I think I did his training program again. I got really close and didn't do it. And then I think I just did a lot of my own training for the last season. But I genuinely think that the very first time I did his program, I was a lot stronger. And I felt like it was the best I had ever felt on the boulder, like even better than when I did it.
Oh, wow. That kind of demonstrates that kind of thing we referenced earlier about the person who just shows up and the person who trains and then tries.
There's benefit to
all the tools.
Yeah.
All the tools isn't enough to.
did you ever get close to just walking away from it? Just be like, you know what, forget it.
I don't think so. I think that it sucked me in so much because it was like because of that. Like I felt like I had gotten in so deep that because I thought I could do it any session. That I had just put so many days into it that I was like, I have to see this through. It became like too big. Like if I had not done that, then I think it would have been easier to walk away or like I'll go try other stuff and like come back to it. But
yeah, it's kind of like you just kind of had to do it at that stage to kind of enjoy climbing on other stuff.
I felt like for like 2 years of that process, like every fall and every spring, I didn't climb on anything else.
Wow.
And I feel like I didn't send like anything else that I was like really proud of in that whole time period. I think I did like a couple, like I did a handful of like AB boulders that I was like, these are cool and I'm psyched to do them. But like, I didn't do anything else that I was like really proud of and excited about.
But you managed to keep your head above water. Like that didn't get you down too much.
It did for a while. I remember like a distinct shift the season before I did it that I was like, I've been using this exact same approach like every single year and I'm getting the exact same results every single year. And it was like, it made me reevaluate like my approach of like, okay, I'm just going to like show up and train on the boulder. I'm going to do this. And I was like, I need to get stronger. And I changed my approach to like that. And that's when like I started getting better results.
Okay. Yeah.
Like it was basically once I like reached out to Foltz and he like wrote me that program that I was like, oh, this is helping. I was like, this is doing something different.
Especially when you have that feeling of, but I could do it any day kind of thing. It takes quite a lot of discipline to accept that maybe the thing that you're doing isn't like optimal.
I know, it's very hard.
Because if you feel like you can do it any day, you don't want to feel like that you have to commit to like a huge training program to do it. Because you're like, well, I could just do it tomorrow and then I won't have to do this training program.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it was like, it really took accepting that I actually wasn't close.
Hmm. Oh, wow. Okay.
And then I was like kind of delusional, maybe.
That's a tough realization after like that when you're so deep.
You're like, wow, I think I've just been wrong for like 2 years now.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, wasn't there like an extra pressure? Because if I remember right, there was like a filmmaker that had come out and videoed you on almost every one of your sessions.
Yeah, this guy Bruce with the Three Peaks film. And he lives really close to Joe's. So it was not as like high pressure for him. It's like he was driving like 3 hours. I think he was driving like an hour to get to the boulder. But it was like this thing that I was like, he was coming out there all the time and filming me. And the first season where I was going like multiple times a week and I was waking up super early, like he was coming out there every day because I was telling him, I was like, dude, I'm super close. I could do it any day. And he's like, well, I got to get the footy. So like,
wow.
I wonder when he started to doubt you. Like cause you can't say
it. I just hope he got paid well.
Wow. Everyone's just way more keen in the like over there. Like I have so much respect for that. Just to show up 5 a.m. each day.
Yeah, I have had very little, almost no desire to do that again since then.
Is it really like take on a project that big, or
I feel like immediately afterwards I was like kind of on, I was on that high of like, I was like, yeah, I'm ready to like do this again. And I think actually like it was a year later I went to Font this last fall to try the Sedan Soul because I was like, I'm ready to be hurt again. and I tried it. I did have really bad conditions that trip, but I tried it a few sessions and I was just like, oh my God, I'm not ready.
Yeah. 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 No, it's like there's a time and a place to put yourself through that, isn't there?
Yeah. I just felt like so unprepared to undertake something that was going to take that much effort again.
Yeah. I feel as well with stuff like that, like I often think the best way for it to happen is when it's quite organic as well. Like you were saying, you went to Font and you were like, I'm going to put myself through this process again on this boulder I've never tried. Yep. Or whatever. There's so many variables that you can't really understand, like about what inspires you about a climb. Like there's so many times where I've gone somewhere new and been like, these are the classics. This is the board I want to do. I really want to do this. And then I get there and I'm like, actually, if I think about it, I don't really want to try it. And sometimes I'm like, I'll be like, oh yeah, this is a classic, I'll try it. But like, if I were just to follow what I wanted to climb, it might not be the piece of rock that I want to climb. I kind of think it's like that process that you went through where you just put yourself through like an emotional roller coaster. You put in some serious graft and you doubt yourself. It's quite exhausting. And it can be so rewarding, but like you want to do it on something which inspires you as well. And like, I feel like it's hard to do that before you actually like show up.
Yeah. It's hard to really know until you climb on it.
Yeah.
That you're like, I'm that interested in this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you had this. I've even found that it takes me a few days and like sometimes like have a session or two on a climb. And I'm like, oh, I'm not that interested in it kind of thing. And then like some years later, you then try it again and you're like, oh, actually, I really like this about this climb. And like, now I'm going to like put some time into it again. And like, it goes through like ebbs and flows. And like, sometimes it feels like you're forcing it. And sometimes it just feels supernatural.
Exactly. I am exactly the same.
Yeah. But it's a big ask to subject yourself to it when you don't know that like inspiration is there.
So, like, after being so sure for so long, like, did you have any idea when you did send it that it was about to happen, or did you just kind of not trust yourself by that point?
I do remember feeling like I was in a lot better mental state that season that I tried it. I think I did it the second session that season.
Before it gets too built up.
Yeah, and I went there and I remember the first session, there's like an unofficial stand start that I had been doing that like was always kind of like my gauge, where I was like, okay, if I do this really quickly, then I feel like pretty good on the boulder. And I think I climbed it like first try that season from like the stand, and I was like, sick, okay, like, I feel good. And I even that day I remember getting really close and like almost doing the crux from the bottom, and was just a whole lot more like mentally comfortable. I felt like more at peace with the situation than the previous seasons,
like, where, like as if you weren't trying to force it as much.
It felt like most of the days that I went there, I was like, because I felt like I could do it any day, I was like, well, I'm going there to do it. And I kind of had to like shift my mentality to like, I'm going to Joe's Valley to rock climb and to climb on the boulder and just experience what is happening.
Wow. Mm. Yeah. I think it's really nice.
That like mentally freed me up a lot.
Yeah. I think it can be really powerful. It's quite like a profound transition, which like in the moment shouldn't really affect like what you're doing. But we had her on the podcast as well, but I got some like mental training from Hazel Finley, and a big topic of like a big thing that we like focused on in that time was a lot about like attachment to the result, and like kind of being like quite invested in the outcome of like each day or like kind of each moment, and like finding that was really limiting when I was climbing. And you show up and you do that climbing, but the intention matters in many ways. And I found I found it like a really powerful transition. It seems very nuanced and almost quite arbitrary, but I think can be quite make a big difference anyway.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that is a very underrated part of actually like executing.
Yeah. The physical training can definitely be all the craze, but it's not quite as celebrated the behind all the scenes.
I think that there it's like a skill to be able to send.
Yeah.
And you see people who have it and are really good at it, and then you see people who don't have it and they're really bad at it.
Yep.
And there's like And you see it in all sports, not just in climbing, where it's like some people have that ability to just execute.
Yeah, that ability to execute is definitely not something everyone's got. Like, you, some people, like, almost the moment they piece it together, they're able to say, oh, I'll do it next go, even if they've been trying it for like 10 sessions and they do it next go. Like, they like know that, like, okay, now I've got it.
I think you also have to be, I think you have to be careful about like the language. I think it's something that you work on. I think that's kind of like an important point. I don't
it's
know,
a teachable like, skill almost. Like, you can,
Yeah. It's learnable, and it's not the most standardizable learning, like a fingerboard plan where, like, if you follow this protocol, you will probably get stronger fingers. It's like, it's different for everyone, but I think everyone is capable of like finding that space by their
own. It's such a nuanced skill.
I guess people are coming into it at different levels, but everyone can improve, I guess.
I think that's why it's incredibly hard to teach or give advice on, because it's so individual.
Yeah, it's going to be different for everyone. And it's kind of finding that like process and like mental thought process that works for you specifically.
Sound like you learned that maybe the hard way as well, or like it was like a long process. it wasn't like a light switch.
No.
But looking back now, did you think you made mistakes that meant that it took you longer to do it? Or do you think because it always felt like it was right there, that the exact same thing would probably happen again? You'd just like keep trying it every session.
Oh my God. I mean, knowing what I know now, I think I would have approached it differently. But I think that if I went back and didn't have this knowledge that I do now, I mean, I think I would just be doing the same thing I did.
We all got stuff to learn, hey?
I think now, like, I think it, having this knowledge and getting myself into that process, I think I could have done it a lot quicker, like, now.
I was wanting to ask as well, because obviously you're going through this process a lot on something relatively unknown territory. You're developing a boulder, and there's not really like, you don't really get as many of these answers, or I don't know, were there other people that were trying it much with you, or you mostly, was it quite a solitary process?
It was mostly solo. I tried it with a few other people a few different times. I climbed on it with Jimmy like twice, maybe. Maybe three times. I think Jimmy, I climbed on it with Jimmy, actually, I think like one of the first sessions, maybe it was like my second or third session on it. Tried it like a couple times before, maybe. And then Jimmy was in Utah and I was like, you should try this project I know about that I've kind of tried. And I took him there. And I think that he did the one move that like I couldn't do, which was like that campus move. And I was like, oh, sick, like it goes.
Wow, that can be quite helpful, right?
Yeah, but like I didn't do the move and I still didn't feel anywhere close. And I don't think that I went back and tried it much, even until like maybe a year later.
Yeah, okay. But it's helpful to have that like little point of reference to be like, it can be done.
And I did climb on it with him another session that was like, I can't remember exactly when it was, but like it was after the point where I was like, I could do it any day. And I went there with him and I remember like warming up and like doing some links and being like, oh, it feels really good this year. And Jimmy was like, it looks like you could just do it right now. And I was like, yeah, dude, that's what I've been thinking for like the like.
Yeah, I can. I've been telling myself that for the last 30 sessions, mate.
But at least it's nice to try it with Jimmy. At least it's nice and reassuring that it definitely is really hard.
Yeah.
Because that's probably Jimmy's kind of bag as well, isn't it? He kind of likes similar kind of
thing. I mean, I imagine that if he went there to do it, he would do it pretty quick.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because he's already, I mean, at I'm not sure exactly how many sessions he's had on it, but he's like climbed it for sure in two pieces and like knows the boulder. And if he went there in good shape, I imagine that he would climb it. Like
he can do it any day.
I mean, and also like, speaking of that, like some people that can just execute, like dude, Jimmy is one of those people. He's just like, he has that piece where he just, he can do it when it's important.
Yeah. Mm. Flip the switch.
Yeah.
Has anyone tried it since, like put serious work into it?
Matt Bolts did it.
Oh, nice.
Yep. He said it took him like 10 or 11 sessions or something. And he told me he had the same experience as I did, where he said he did all the moves very quickly and thought that it wasn't going to be that hard. And that he was like, yeah, I like kind of thought I was going to do it like my second session because I did so well on it like my first day.
That's like, then, that's so nice though, that he had the same experience.
It's very reassuring that he was like, yeah, it wasn't until I tried to put it together that I realized that like all the transitions are kind of what makes it really hard.
I kind of hope everyone has that experience on that boulder. It's just going to be great to be like a fly on the wall next to that boulder. It's like people come along like, dude, I'm going to do this really quick. I just did all the moves. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. It's a nice humbling process.
Oh, it was nice. I remember when I talked to him, I think after the first day that he tried it, he was like, yeah, I did all the moves, like almost like, individual moves. I think he said he did most of them like first or second try, and I was like, oh no.
Here we go.
I was like, oh no, here we go. Yeah.
But also it's got a potential sit start, doesn't it?
It does, and I have gone and I've tried it a few times, and kind of like I said earlier, I just don't know that I'm
ready.
I don't know that I'm ready to get involved with that. Yeah.
Did you do all the moves quite quickly?
So this is actually, so I originally thought that from the sit moves to the stand would probably be like a V12 or a V13 boulder just to get into the stand. And that was like most of the reason I'd never even try it from down there. Like I had played on the moves a little bit and I was like, nah, I don't know. Like it just seems like I'm already like, can't do this. And the session before I sent the boulder, when I got done like with like trying it, I was like, I'm not going to do it today. I was like, maybe I'll just have a play on the low moves. And I figured out a totally different way to do the bottom. And I was like, oh, it might be like V10. Maybe like V9, V10 to get into it instead. And I immediately was like, wow, that's a way better start.
Oh, no.
I was like very bit like conflicted with myself because like I had just realized like 40 something days in that I was like, that's kind of like a much better place to start. But I've been trying it from like here forever. And I went back and like did it the next session from like where I'd been trying it from.
Yeah. And then it's like,
and now I'm like, well, there's the real start.
Oh no. just when you look for that like euphoric moment of relief, you're like, is that my session over or do I?
Yeah. Or have I just started?
Do I chew a cup again? That's a good warm up try.
But unfortunately, I kind of don't think it's going to be any harder. I don't think it is a grade harder from down there. Like I've never tried a 9A boulder, but it just doesn't seem like it adds enough to make it that much harder.
I also think it can be like, I don't shy away from doing sits. I quite often like doing sit starts, or like I do a lot of sit starts and just around the fight. But like
truffle pig.
What are you talking about? But like, as in like, I don't necessarily like doing a sit start when it doesn't add, when I don't feel it adds quality. If there was like a really classic climb that was a stand start and the sit start was on chossy rock, or like just adds volume to the climb, not necessarily interesting moves or interesting like sequence, it can feel quite psychologically strange to like commit yourself to it. When, and especially when you've like had such a process with the stand start, even though the sit start are on like the same good rock, it's not like the real like feature of the boulder. I saw that like session of you working on it, and it looks like the main feature of the boulder is still the climbing and the stand start and kind of compressing on that fridge. I kind of feel like you've done the feature.
I feel when you like walk up to the boulder and you look at it, there's like this big block, and you you look at it and you're like, well, that's a star bolt.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And it's like, and that's like the sit.
Okay. Yeah.
So I said,
like visually, it's probably, it makes the most sense when you look at it. You're like, that just, like, if you didn't tell anyone where it started and you just were like, this is a climb, they would probably show up and think that was the start.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, I sense that there's like a part of you that does want to go back and do it from there still.
I do.
Because it would be fascinating, because of what's happened on this boulder, like every time, it would be fascinating to find out if adding a bit in, like right now, you're like, oh, I don't think it will add that much. But then are we going to be doing like 30 sessions down the line? You'd be like, okay, it definitely does add something.
I thought I was close. I was not.
I think the problem though is that it's like, I felt like it was so close to limit just to do the stand. That, like, you know, a lot of times you do a boulder and you're like, I could probably repeat that like fairly quickly, but I don't feel like that with this one. So just to like add anything into it, or just to even be able to repeat what I've already done, I'm like, oh my god, that might take me like 20 more days.
Yeah. Okay, so it's quite a commitment. Yeah,
so I mean, maybe I'm wrong, I don't know. I'm not ready to be hurt again.
Yeah. And like we were saying, there's a time and a place to put yourself through these processes.
I do really, really want to do it, but not yet.
Not right now.
Yeah.
And can I ask what's happening for you now? When the stuff that you like publicize, the majority of it is First Ascent, I feel. But then there's also like, I saw you did like Penrose Step. Mm-hmm. Seemed quite like a psychologically quite like a significant boulder for you, and it looks actually looks like really not your style, I guess. Like, it looks quite a small box up there and on crimps as well. That looked like an interesting process, but also what's inspiring you now? What dictates where you spend your months?
Since I've been in North Carolina, I've just been really excited about doing new things, and I think that the reason I enjoy it more is because I think what I like the most about climbing is like the puzzle and the figuring things out. And I'm climbing on projects mostly that are in a grade range that I feel like once I figure them out, I do them relatively quickly. And sometimes they're really tricky. But it's like, I'm getting a lot of satisfaction from like hiking, finding boulders, cleaning them, like doing a whole bunch of effort, and then like spending several days just figuring out beta. And then all of a sudden you figure out the beta and you're like, oh, I've unlocked it. Now I can do it. And then you do it really quickly. And it's almost the exact opposite of what I did on Moonlight.
Yeah, it's nice, like set menu fun.
Like
you don't have to get quite as much mental turmoil to enjoy the reward.
Set menu fun. I like that. Little morsels of the project. Oh, don't mind if I do.
But I'm getting like a long, because I'm like spending time hiking and like building trails and like cleaning boulders. And I don't know if you've looked at pictures of like the Southeast, but when you clean boulders here, it sucks and it takes forever. They are like covered in moss, like fully covered. Like sometimes it will, I'll spend an entire day just cleaning one boulder, and then I'll be so tired that like I'll climb on it for like 20 minutes. and you have no idea like what you're doing. You're like totally wrecked. Like you just like pull on some positions and you're like, okay, I'm gonna go home and like eat dinner and I'll come back.
Yeah.
And when it's so like, covered as well, you don't even know what's going to be underneath all of that.
Yeah, you might uncover some massive holds and have just spent ages cleaning a like walk.
But it's like, what's enjoyable to me is that like, instead of spending like 10 days to show up to a, like an established boulder and try to climb it, like I might spend like 3 days, like just like cutting a trail, finding it, cleaning it, figuring out an easy way to get to it. I mean, it's been 3 or 4 days just figuring out good beta, and then maybe I'll do it on like the 5th day of climbing. So I get like this long process on things that aren't super difficult or challenging, but it, like I get to spend a lot of time doing it, and it's still really like I get almost the same amount or more satisfaction from doing it than it just showing up and doing like a hard established boulder.
Yeah. So there's a genuine sense of like, that's something for the climbing, like the climbing world as well. Like you leave something there, which like can be experienced by others as well, which I always think is quite nice.
Yeah. It's really cool to see other people like get excited and go climb them. And there's like some other really strong people who live here. And what almost always happens is like, I'll spend like 3 or 4 days like figuring out how to do the boulder. And when I finally figure it out and do it, I'll like take them there, and then they'll do it like pretty quick. Like I took, I took this dude, Elijah and John, to the beekeeper yesterday, and Elijah did it in like an hour.
Oh, no.
And he's super, like, he's super strong. But, like, if I had taken him there, like, 4 days ago, he probably wouldn't have done it in an hour.
Yeah.
He would have had no idea, like, you know.
Yeah, he'd have 24 hours worth of cleaning to do anyway before.
Yeah. That's why I always think when people talk about, like, number of sessions or something they, like, have put into something, it still means remarkably little if you have 50 beta videos. It's different
yeah.
if you're like figuring all this out for yourself.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
But like, are beta videos that helpful for you, or do you always, even on like any old boulder, you mostly just trying to make up your own sequence anyway?
I think they're pretty helpful usually. There's usually someone who's, I mean, tall-ish who's done it.
Yeah. Tall person, beta.
Yeah. And if I like, if I go and usually if I go and I'm trying to do it like an established boulder, my first instinct is to stick to like what I know works and what I know other people have done. Because I used to be the opposite, where I'd be like, I'm really tall, I can find my own way to do it. And it would like bite me in the ass a lot of the time, where I'd spend a really long time thinking I can do some huge move and skip a bunch of holds just to find out that like, the way that everyone does the boulder is actually easier for me.
Yeah, true.
It's a different balance you've got to like.
Yeah. So now I default.
Yeah. And so open mind to other options, but not just only those other options.
You said you're soon to be moving back to Salt Lake City, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is it that's drawing you back that way? Is there the season getting going over there, or?
Well, I have my girlfriend and I have like rent a house there that has just been sitting there for like 6 months that we're just renting.
So, a solid financial decision.
We're going home. Our house.
Yeah. Why are you going back to Utah? Oh yeah, I live there.
It's funny because with all the like, you know, because there's been like a kind of USA comp migration to Salt Lake City. I was surprised you couldn't find anyone to live there, like sublet.
Yeah, we planned to be here for like a month.
Oh, right.
And then we planned to be here for like another month or a month and a half. And then, I don't know, just kind of, we spiraled. We're still here. We have a definitive, we have a definitive end date though. We like have to go home. So we're going home soon.
Oh, okay.
All right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Nice. A bit of change of scenery. It can be quite nice.
Yeah. It's been really fun though. I spent most of the summer just like exploring and like brushing things and kind of getting them ready for, and then it actually got cold. That was kind of why we decided to stay, is that we both spent like a lot of the summer like getting psyched on things. And then we were like, oh, we're going to leave as soon as it gets cold. Like, we don't want to do that.
Yeah. It keeps you tempted.
Yeah.
Have you got anything that you're psyched on back up in Salt Lake City way?
I don't know. I will probably go to Vegas and try Sleepwalker more.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I saw you've had like a session on that. Have you tried it much or just a bit?
I tried it a lot, actually.
All right.
I think it was 2 years ago. I tried it like a lot. Maybe like 20 sessions or something.
All right. Okay.
And I think that was the season right after I did Moonlight, where I was like, yeah, like get me in another long-term project. I'm psyched.
Did you see the strong guy did like a slightly different sequence that he thinks changes the grade? Do you see that?
I did see that. I don't think that that's any easier.
Right. Okay. Have you tried it?
So I've been doing it similar to how he does. He's on two different underclings. There's like the way that most people do is they get a little further and they come into this one. And he's on like this one and this one. The only thing he did different was skipping an intermediate.
Yeah, for the last move, he jumps all the way to the.
Which,
yeah,
he launches
Jarg, doesn't he?
Y'all watched the video of Jimmy doing the first ascent, right?
Hmm.
I mean, Jimmy was trying to skip that hold at the end.
Yeah.
For like, I don't know, like a bunch of days, and fell off that move a bunch of days, and then switched to using that hold and did it like next try.
Yeah.
So I'm not convinced that that was easier either.
Yeah. This guy might just be really
just
good.
Just a beast, yeah.
Yeah. No, but that thing looks good.
Have you noticed that though with loads of the comp climbers coming to Salt Lake? Have you noticed has that changed the scene out there now with all these like more strong people? Or are they mostly staying inside training?
I think it's changed a little bit. They're definitely inside and training a lot, but they're all so strong that they go outside and they just do things really quickly. Mm-hmm. And my interpretation is that a lot of them don't realize how strong they are. And they oftentimes, like how you were saying, people take a lot of, they're like excited to go out and like downgrade things. That seems like it has become more, that's happening more and more often because they're like, seems like maybe they don't realize how strong they are, or maybe they are all, because they're all in this like comp scene and they're all really competitive, that they feel like they have something to prove and they like want to go out and they want to downgrade. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what it is, but it seems like it's happening more and more often.
Yeah,
it's hard to know whether they're just like actually not aware that they are just really good.
Yeah.
or if it is like
Or if they know, but they're like trying to prove a point.
Yeah.
I guess it's the same thing as we were talking about earlier, isn't it? It's exactly the same thing. It's like if you spent 100 days training on something similar and then you do it quickly, it's like you look like you've done it really quickly, but in a sense, you've been training for it.
I also, we like kind of briefly touched upon it, the thing of downgrading things as well. It can be like a lot of it can be part of the phenomenon of reacting in a way to almost like detract from other people's achievements as well. You reference people having small fingers, and it might be like, oh, well, they did that because they have small fingers, or they did that because they were tall. Actually, you don't need to be like, there doesn't have to be a reason other than like, they did that because they put loads of work in and they were a really good climber. And I still haven't really understood. I generally feel like the climbing community is quite a kind space, and usually people do wish well of other climbers, but there definitely does feel like an attitude, and I think it's more in the online space where people are hasty to detract from people's endeavors a little. But I'm not really sure where it's come from. We've spoken about it a few times on the podcast, haven't we, Sam? But I don't feel we've fully gotten to the bottom of it.
Well, so yeah. One thing that we spoke about was when Aiden and Will climbed Alphen out in Switzerland, there were people in the comments downgrading it on their behalf and like getting angry that they weren't downgrading it. Being like, well, I said, you haven't even touched the holes, and they're still like, ah.
I remember that. I remember that. I was upset about that. I haven't even touched the boulder. I've never even seen it, but like, I'm like, I think people have a very preconceived notion about who they think should be able to do what. And people, for whatever reason, viewed Sean as capable of establishing a V17. And no one questioned him when he did it because he had Daniel and Jimmy and like the crew like backing him up and saying, like, yeah, we all think this is this hard. We encouraged him to call it that grade. But then when people who were less known, I think when Will did the boulder, he was relatively unknown, like, right?
Internationally speaking, yeah, I think so. Certainly the Americans like, didn't seem to know him in the comments. Almost,
I had almost never heard of him. And I think most people were like, who is Will Bosey? There's no way this dude we've never heard of could climb the hardest boulder in the world.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I've climbed with Will since I was a kid, and he's always been freakishly strong. Like, it's not like he's ramped up in his ability.
That's why it's so funny when he then went and climbed Burden, and all those commenters went a bit quiet.
Oh yeah. I remember. I posted something when he did Burden. I like posted his. Like shared his post and was like, I don't see anybody saying anything now. I was like, everybody had something to say about Alphen, but like, and a lot of those Alphen comments were like, go do Burden. It's like actually a V17.
Yeah. And now where do you go from that? Oh, it was the original. Yeah. It's a funny space, the online world.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I agree. I feel like I noticed that a lot online. It's definitely more online than in person, where people are like kind of quick to attempt to tear others down.
I feel like whenever I get chatting to people at the crag, or if I'm training in a climbing wall, generally everyone's not like that at all. they're so encouraging.
No one's going to say it to your face.
Yeah, but that is the thing. Yeah, you know? Yeah.
But it's like, what are they not going to see you and walk up to you in the gym and say, "Hey, man, like, nice job on Alphen." There's no fucking way that's V17.
But I don't really know, kind of, why they don't. Because it's not like Aiden's going to like bust out some like carve a car and take them down.
Yeah. Oh, well, you don't know, mate.
Because they don't have to face you directly.
Yeah.
It's like a much less personal way. It's like not like, it's almost like not like they're talking to you. Like, you hear it because it's like you're in this video and there's all these comments about you. But they're like, I mean, if you compare it to like other sports, like you have like Sports Center, and like they talk about the performance of the basketball players or the football players or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be like similar to that, but the only difference that you have is climbing outside is not a competitive sport.
Yeah. The, like, it theoretically like just it, should be void of ego in many ways.
Yeah. And one of the things that I would compare outside climbing to would be like backcountry skiing or snowboarding, because you're not competing. Like if you go heli drop on some mountain and you go like snowboard down a huge cliff, like you're not competing against anyone to do that. There is like snowboarding in the Olympics and they're competing against each other. And they have X Games where they compete against each other, which would be like the same as like the World Cup circuit and like the Olympics. But the outdoor is like not really a competition, but a lot of people still seem to treat it that way.
Yeah, I think that is my like confusion with it. What other people do out there kind of has no influence over anyone else's experience.
I've got to move. The sun is hitting me.
No worries. Like
bad conditions on the sofa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is like kind of the thing that I feel is strange, is there's no reason not to just celebrate what people have done, because whether you like chat shit about it or like, or just be like happy for them, what they've done is completely independent of other people's experiences in so many ways. It's not like they've done that boulder, so now you can't do that boulder.
And I think the only thing that separates it from like skiing or snowboarding, like that comparison, would be that climbing outside has grades. So there is like a difficulty scale to it where you're saying like, I did this thing that is this hard. That's where people get really caught up.
I think also as climbing grows and there are more and more people kind of watching from the sidelines, I've seen people seem to now, they're getting a bit more invested in their like chosen favorite climbers. And so I think that's why a lot of the people who really love Sean, he was their favorite climber or whatever, when other people came along and did his hard climb, they like wanted to, it's almost like they wanted to bash them to kind of keep Sean up, which is like so unnecessary. Like you don't, like there's no need to do that.
It's also counterproductive too, because Sean put the boulder up and called it that grid. So you're kind of bashing him at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're
it's not like it got easier.
He was the one who chose the grade. So you're definitively telling that he's the guy who didn't know what he was talking about if you're like downgrading it, because it was his choice, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Funny space.
But yeah, I guess I would love to kind of encourage people to just care a little bit less about the grades of things that you've never tried or you've never felt the whole, it's like, don't get so invested. Like, it's okay.
Or have a little bit more about what you say and how it makes people feel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's probably the best way to go about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that understanding that everyone, like all these people are just real people at the end of the day, and it's just unnecessary.
And but, not just some figment on the internet.
I actually wonder when you were referencing like channels where people like will communicate about other sports like basketball or sports which are much bigger like that, the scales are so misbalanced that it's almost, I don't know, that basketball player or like that football player is never going to just be reading through all these comments. It's like so detached. You talk about it, the actual,
it's like millions of people.
It's like so diluted that it's just kind of like, it's just noise, I guess. Whereas like the climbing world is, until very recent years, I think it's getting quite big now, but like until very recent years, it's kind of been like the people that engage, like interact online are people that you kind of could just meet at the climbing wall or like at the crag.
Yeah.
And like it's kind of like that community is the climbers. Whereas I feel like that is maybe like expanding at quite a high rate, maybe like it's kind of like confusing to get that balance, because maybe in a few years time it would be like just noise to like some climbers.
See, I don't know, the thing that's different with climbing though is that like if you're climbing outside, you're always like, especially if you're professional, you're bopping around to all sorts of different popular crags, and anyone who is into climbing outside, whether you just got into it or you've been in it for a while, like the first thing you want to do is go to travel to really popular crags. And you're like never going to run into like a basketball star, like at the Gold's Gym, you know?
But go shoot some heaps.
But you're like professional climber that you talk shit about, like at Bishop.
And And also, climbing is still small enough that something gets loads of comments on Instagram. It's probably like 70 comments or like 100 comments. It doesn't take that long to read 100 comments if most of them are just biceps emojis. So like, yeah. There's a good chance they have read your comment as well. Don't risk it. Unless you get battered by Aiden.
Yeah. Cutting those rest days is a good use, mate.
I think everyone could stand to be a little bit nicer. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's the burden progress coming?
Yeah, it's been good actually. It feels a lot better now. I've been here in Finland for quite a while, but like the first couple of weeks, I had a couple of friends out and straight away had some issues with my skin, which meant that I was generally just climbing on other stuff mostly, which was really nice. The climbing here, the quality of the climbing, there's loads of really classic boulders. It's like beautiful here and the scenery was lovely. So it was actually really nice in that time to the quality is some of my favorite. I think some of my favorite climbs are definitely around here. Like the quality of the rock like is really high. In those weeks, it was really nice weather. And so it was quite a nice time to explore and just do a lot of mileage and like get a lot of climbing in. And then got better skin and started trying burden more when I was more solo on my trip and got some motivation for it. I've been waiting out for like 2.5 weeks of just like relentlessly wet rock. I was expecting to spend less time here, but I was always like, the forecast was tantalizing. It was always like, next week will be dry. Next week will be dry. It'll be 3 days and it'll be dry. but yesterday was the first day where it was naturally just like completely dry, which was nice. And it's very cold. Sick. So it's like a little hard, but, no, it feels good. It doesn't feel forced to try it. I quite look forward to trying it. And I feel pretty close and quite reliable through the start.
Nice.
It feels like I'm falling off because of like dry fires. But the moves feel reliable. So it's nice. And
Sick.
Sean actually arrived today.
Nice.
He sent his best. I was going to meet him at the sauna, but... nice. Save it for another day. He sends his bestie.
Sweet. Yeah, I tell him I say hey.
So it's nice. It's a nice scene out here. I think probably stay for not so much longer because it's getting really cold.
And Sean just got there too, right?
yeah, I think he likes the cold weather.
Dang.
Yeah, no, it's good. Good fun.
That's good. Sounds like you're enjoying it at least.
Yeah, no, I've had a really nice time. And there's loads to do. I've had like a load of new experiences. Had a day climbing with a local, exploring some like the archipelago around here, which like I've never done on, like you take a boat out with some pads and you kind of like...
I did that like a few weeks ago. We did like a team trip, like a Mad Rock team trip and near Tahoe. And like rented boats, like went out with like pads on boats to this area for like a couple days.
It's a pretty amazing experience, right? It feels like a proper pilgrimage to find the boulders. Yeah. And climbing something in that kind of scenery is feels quite special.
It's also nice to just sit the whole way to a boulder.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good approach, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But certainly having fun. But cheers for asking.
Yeah, man. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
Well, what's your thoughts on the boulder itself?
What's my thoughts on the boulder? I feel like I've learned to climb it. Enjoy my time on it more. Like, I was thinking about it a little bit when we're talking a bit about committing to that process. I came on this trip in quite a nice place. I wanted to try it, but I wanted to explore the rest of the place. And I'm really glad that I was in that headspace when I arrived because when my skin's been bad and it's been like quite painful to climb on it or like it's really hard to climb with lots of tape on it. And so you see a lot of like backwards regression, but also it's not so fun to try because you feel like you could fire off at any point and like it's like quite painful. And I was like, actually, I don't enjoy trying it in these times. And like, maybe you could learn some things. Maybe you could like practice physically, but it's not fun for me. It's not part of the process I enjoy. And so it was nice. I like didn't feel too pressured this time. So I was kind of actually in these times, I'm going to climb elsewhere. Like I'm just not going to force it. And I think I've enjoyed the boulder experience, trying the boulder much more as a result. Cause it's like, oh, okay, the weather's good. I have to go and try Burden. Day on day off, or like I just rest to try it. It's kind of like, okay, I don't want to try it, or like I want to go and try this other project that I've been working on more. And so it's quite nice. It's a nice, I feel in a good place with it. And as a result, I see the boulder through like completely different lens. And I'm like, wow, okay, yeah, this is quite like a cool historical piece of rock. I've kind of learned to really enjoy a lot of things about it, whereas maybe almost through exhaustion or like kind of that like inorganic forced motivation, I think I was almost I'd almost like damaged my interpretation of the boulder, but like I feel in a really good place with it now. Yeah, I feel good. Relaxed. So yeah, it's cool. It can be sharp, but you learn to move around it and I feel it's fun.
It seems like boulders like that are really hard to try a lot just because of the skin factor.
Yeah,
because it's so few moves, and even though you really want to like dial in the moves, like you can only try it so much before you just kind of put yourself in a hole.
And then
you can't get out of it, and you're
I feel like and I think if you get really bad skin, it's quite hard to dig yourself out of that hole.
You got to exercise a lot of restraint, don't you, on that one?
I feel like it's taught me a lot about climbing, projecting, the game of patience.
Sick.
It's been a good experience. I've enjoyed it. I'm glad I've come here.
What are your thoughts on the difficulty? Curious. Because I only have speculation.
It's quite a funny one. In that, partly it suits me not very well, in that like you can't really slow the movements down. And so like you have to be quite snatchy, and it's quite an unnatural style for me. And I feel I've adapted quite a lot to that. And it's weird. The moves don't feel particularly like, the moves don't feel hard or like physical now. I can like usually do, when I'm warm, it takes me quite a long time to warm up. I can pull, like, I feel like I can pull on any move, and like most times I'll do it. But like, it feels like a few moves in, I'll usually like numb out. The last session I had, I'd only ever fall off if I dry fired or foot popped. It didn't feel like a physical thing. It feels like I've got to move really well. The movement isn't controlled, so there feels like an element of randomness to it. And so it feels really hard to do. In a physical sense, I don't know. It obviously is a physical boulder. I feel like there's a threshold of physicality, but like it doesn't feel like the physicality is going to be like always the issue. You've got to like move really well, which is a nice combination of like, yes, it's physical, but like you can't just be strong and it'd be fine.
This might be a can of worms for the 2 hours, but how much do you think the parts surrounding boulders affect the difficulty of the boulder that is not actually the climbing? Like, so does that make sense?
Like conditions, skin,
like how, like obviously, like where Burden is, the weather seems to be really unpredictable and often like pretty bad.
Yeah.
Whereas like there's this boulder that has very few moves that you can't try that often because you'll wreck your skin. Whereas like you have a boulder like Sleepwalker, which like you could try every single day for like a week and your skin would be fine. And you have a million beta videos. You have a ton of stashed pads, and you have other people who are always motivated and trying it at that same place who are strong, and you can feed off each other's motivation.
Yeah. It makes a massive difference. I think it's more of a question for like the person who like, in terms of like how hard it is to do a climb, it makes a huge difference. I was thinking this, say if you like put Burden next to Alphane, where it's pretty much perma-dry and the conditions are generally always pretty good. I don't think people would really dispute a difference in the difficulty.
But like, do you think it would have the same reputation that it does?
No, I kind of, sure, it's annoying. I like the whole package.
Yeah.
Obviously, this isn't what I was like, would hope for. Like, I'd hope to not have like 2.5 weeks of just wet. But I kind of feel like it's part of it. And like, I feel like, I was chatting to this with my mates, Sam and Jim, when we were here in the first half of the trip, because the quality of the climbing, like I repeat myself, it's like phenomenal. It's so nice here. So we were questioning like, why isn't this so popular? Some of this rock is like as good as anything you'd find in Switzerland. And I think the shapes and the moves are often better in many cases. And I was like, how is this not so popular? And even like the locals are often like, wow, like you're here in Finland climbing on these boulders, why are you here, kind of thing. And I'm like, because they're flipping amazing and they are really good. But lots of the reason we're like, oh, okay, it doesn't, maybe makes less sense, is partly it's less documented, so it's hard, like it's inaccessible, but also you have to be psyched. You'll often like drive for 20 minutes and then walk for 20 minutes to find a boulder. And like, that's the one boulder there. It's one boulder.
Yeah.
So then you'd like warm up, do that boulder. And then you'd maybe like walk back, drive to another spot, do another walk in, walk back. And then maybe you do like 3 boulders in a day, but it's a massive day because you've done 3 crags and like walked in, found them, and maybe if, like had to clean
drove
them
an hour.
Yeah. So like, you have to be psyched. But then we were also making the comment that, and I feel like this is a micro scale of like generally the point I'm alluding to, is like you appreciate that boulder so much more. You see it through such a different set of eyes, because like the analogy we made is it's like a pilgrimage. You've put in some work, like you found out about this boulder and you've put in the work to be there. And so like really appreciate the special things about that place. And I think the point I'm trying to make is Burden, with all its like annoying complexities, it's like part of that process as well. It makes the days when you climb on it fun. You really appreciate those days and you're like kind of like, wow, okay, it's a nice day today. It's dry. It's not like I'm not just suffering with bad skin. Like you kind of enjoy them, and like the holds are uncomfortable. I feel like a big thing that's made it more fun is I've learned to hold them in a way which I feel more predictable. And so like, I'm kind of enjoying doing the moves now. Whereas at one point I was a bit like, every move I was a bit like, oh no, the next hold might just eat me. I feel like you would kind of adapt, and all of those like kind of setbacks feel like part of that process. Like I don't feel like I regret all of those days where things didn't go to plan.
Sick.
But haven't you noticed as well that just like all those things around a boulder does affect the grade a bit as well? So like, I explained this to someone else I was chatting to, like if you have the exact same boulder in a like on a car park, like a car park crag, and you had its exact replica boulder that was like 3 miles up a steep track, the one up a steep track will get a higher grade because it's just harder to do it. It's funny, like the actual boulder should be the same, but it's just harder to do something if you've got to walk up a huge cliff.
That's what I was getting at. Yeah.
Yeah. But
does it actually become harder because of these things surrounding it that's not the climbing itself?
Yeah, I think it's really down to like, I think it does become harder. Whether or not that's incorporated into the person who grades it, I'm not sure. It's like a big thing. I feel like we have like grit stone in the UK, and like, it's kind of a bit of a joke that maybe you get a couple of good days of conditions per year kind of thing.
I've heard.
And it's kind of like, well, do you grade it for those couple of good days, or do you grade it for like an acceptable day? And it's like, it makes such a big difference on certain things that it's kind of, what is difficulty? Because if the difficulty is like, how hard it is to do something. Obviously, that's an important factor. The thing is, there's always going to be an anomaly where somebody shows up on that perfect day and they're like, oh, what are you talking about? It's easier than that. It's kind of like, how much do you incorporate into the entire package? It might take you a lot more sessions.
That was one of my arguments I mean, I've never seen Alphane, but that was one of my arguments for it being great, is that I thought people were underestimating how accessible it was.
Oh, yeah. That thing is like crazy.
It's always dry. You have the strongest people in the world going there and all climbing on it together and all like feeding off of each other and all sharing beta and motivation. I was like, you always have enough pads.
Yeah, you don't have to carry pads.
It's also got like a magical air current of like cold, doesn't it? So it feels, it emanates cold from under the rock. So it feels cold there, even when it's not a cold day.
Yeah, I think the day I climbed it was 22 degrees.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Outside. And it was fine in there. It had cold air. And like, I think another thing as well is, it's as far as hard climbs go, it's pretty good on the skin. You can have
It seems like the very beginning may take a bit, but the rest is like, smooth and comfortable.
If you're smart and you don't just rag yourself on the first section, you can have like a massive day there, rest a day, and just like your skin is fine to go the next day. How many hard boulders is that like?
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, something like
very few
looks like that. But but also it's not even just skin, like generally on certain hard things, just the style of them or a certain hold or something like is a bit tweaky. Something like Sleepwalker, I imagine like just like undercuts all the time. If you're like working on the bottom, Daniel's working on the bottom section or something and he's just lapping like undercut moves. Like it's got to nail your wrist or you get like golfer's elbow or something. Like there's something uncomfortable about it. Whereas like Alphane is pretty like comfy holds, very varied grip type. Yeah, it's just like as accessible as it can get.
Always thought that a lot of the reputation that boulders get is about how often they get repeated. And I have always thought that Burden would maybe not have that same reputation if it didn't have all of these factors around it.
Yeah.
Because it like, I mean, it's obviously very difficult, but Alphane is obviously also very difficult and it got done a lot more times, a lot quicker. And it's not to say that one is easier or more difficult than the other, but I think that it's a lot easier to go to Alphane and try Alphane, and you can get probably two or three as many times sessions in on Alphane than you could on Burden in the same amount of elapsed time.
Yeah.
So it will get done faster.
Yeah.
I think that.
Yeah.
It's hard to make that case.
We wondered that a while back, didn't we, Aiden? We wondered like if Burden was on the same boulder as Alphane, how many ascents would it have had by now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hard to say. I mean, it's impossible to say, but I'm guessing very likely more than two, but it's impossible.
Maybe more. The skin factor is still a big one.
Yeah.
If you took Burden and it wasn't sharp.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's impossible.
It's so bolder now.
But then, that is an interesting question. I think it is down to like the first ascensionist as well and how much they incorporate those factors into the like grade of a boulder. I feel like there's a difference between like the grade of a boulder. It's weird. I feel like there's a difference between like the difficulty of a boulder in like a physical and technical sense and then a difficulty in like an entirety, in its entirety, and like the difficulty in how hard it is to do.
And exactly. Yeah.
Obviously, Burden is physically and technically difficult. I think the fringes of like what makes it more difficult to do are larger. The margins are larger than they would be on other boulders, if that makes sense.
And I feel like that ties into the preparing for a boulder versus showing up and learning on it as well. Because if you show up to a boulder like Burden unprepared and you try to learn on it, like you're screwed.
Yeah.
But if you show up like strong and capable of doing it, then you'll probably have a lot more success.
Yeah.
That's why it's like a boulder like Alphane is like maybe completely opposite. You could show up and just get all of your fitness on the boulder itself.
So it's like the perfect boulder to have the replica holds available from Core Climbing.
Well, very good sign.
Doing your job for you there, Aidan.
Well, thank you very much. It would be interesting to chat to Nale about it. I've heard he's here, but he's hard to track down.
He seems quite elusive.
No, I respect it. But
it would be great. It would be great to hear from him though, wouldn't it? I'd love to hear his opinion.
I've heard, who knows? I've heard whispers that he's as psyched as ever and just climbing loads. And he's living here in Helsinki, I'm pretty sure. And I'm like, wow. Really? I'm like, sick. I'm fascinated to see, like, just I know how much good rock there is around. I'm like, how many amazing boulders?
Yeah.
How many amazing boulders are there out there which I have no idea they exist? But who knows?
Mega.
Oh, perfect.
Right.
All right.
Well, thanks so much. That was great. Cheers, bud.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. It's been lovely to kind of virtually meet you in person. Hopefully some point soon. If you're ever in Europe or if I'm in the US, it'd be nice. We can
any US plans soon?
I've flirted with the idea of a long trip there, and like kind of like looking to like source a visa for like a year or so. Just kind of need to look seriously into the application and practicalities of it. But I've got to know quite a few people out there. I like spent quite a bit of time in Colorado in 2019, and then also just people who've come over to Europe I've met as well. Mm-hmm. It's kind of it's vast. There's so many places I'd like to explore. I feel like I'd like to do it justice with a prolonged spell where I can do a little more than scratch the surface.
Yeah, short trips are hard.
Exactly. But I will be sure to let you know if I'm over that way.
Sweet.
Maybe I'll hit up Joey.
Oh yeah, dude. I'm sure you can stay at the barn, no problem.
Cheers, man. Perfect.
Great chat, well, you guys.
Lovely chat to you.
Cheers,
Taylor.
Buddy.
All right. See you later.
See ya.